You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. If you're there, you're watching someone go crazy, starting to lose their mind a little bit. No, I woke up late. This is a real boring story, but I got a new mouth guard, night guard for my mouth, my teeth. You know, I grind. Especially nowadays, I'm a grinder. But I got a new one fitted, and it was kind of like not tight like the other one. And I woke up, man. My jaw doesn't hurt. I feel like my neck's better. Could you imagine if I've gone through all this shit for the last 5 years, and it was all because my night guard was too tight? A, embarrassing. B, embarrassing. C, hey, any kind of relief. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show, continued support. I want to thank my patrons who, the patrons are awesome. I say it every episode, but, you know, they really kick ass and they go above and beyond. Subscribing is unbelievable. I appreciate everybody who subscribes and listens and gives the podcast a chance and follows us on all our handles, our social handles, at Inside of You Podcast, I think on Instagram, Facebook, and at Inside of You Pod on Twitter. Follow us, subscribe. I'm the Michael Rosenbaum on Instagram. Give me some support. I'm always supporting. I'm doing some funny stuff on, well, some people think it's funny, on Instagram, some fun videos. I do Instagram lives. You never know who's going to be my guest. I like to talk to people. I like to invite people on the Instagram lives. The Patreon, I do YouTube lives, all that stuff. And of course, Left on Laurel, my music, the band's music is available everywhere free. Or if you really want to pay for it, you can go to iTunes. But why would you do that? I mean, it's cool. I am waiting for someone, a surprise guest. All right, here he is. Folks, he's zooming me. Should I admit him? Boom.
Let's do this, man.
Dude, so Grant Gustin's on the podcast, as you know. We, of course, talk a little bit about you. We talked about your bandanas. We talked about, I think, about, you know, your good looks. We talk about, you know, you take a shirt off. You know, he's very humble. He's a sweet guy. What did you get out of working with him? It's the one thing that you take it, like, Grant, I'll always remember this about Grant.
I will always remember the first table read when we meet Barry Allen. It's got to be intimidating, man, because we're doing this table read and he's coming in, he's playing the Flash and it's his episode and he comes in and he fucking nails it in the table read. I didn't even need to see what he was going to do on set. In the table read, I knew, oh my God, they made the right decision. And then it was just really cool on a yearly basis, aside from the two of us becoming friends, aside from us, enjoying working together, aside from us both being able to be very honest with one another, we had that ability, which is not super common. It was really nice just going to his show once or twice a year. It was like a change of pace. It was nice. And the catering was...
Kidding wasn't as good as Arrow's.
No, he was. I just honestly, man, I'll just never forget working with him.
I love you more than anyone. You come back maybe every couple of weeks or whatever, just check in for a morning read.
Yeah, sure, man. Give give Grant my love. Say hi to LA. Hope that his brother and all of his family is doing well and doing safe. And I miss his face straight up.
All right. Well, I miss you, buddy. And give the family a hug. And I can't wait to hug you.
All right, dude. Talk to you soon.
See you, buddy. Inside of You is brought to you by Sunbasket. Boy, do I need these guys right now. Right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go right now to sunbasket.com/IOU and enter promo code IOU at checkout. So without further ado, stick around afterwards and please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't. If you're a Grant fan, I know you're a Grant fan. You're here for Grant. I love it. But, you know, give the podcast a chance. I think you'll learn something, even if you don't know all the guests I have. I'd appreciate your support and I hope you enjoy this. Let's get inside of Grant Gustin. It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. And
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Now, I fucked it up. It's Gustin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whew. How many people call you Gustin?
It hasn't happened in a long time, but I used to get it growing up all the time.
Really? Did you hate it? Did you hate when people mispronounce your name?
I mean, I don't care now, but as a kid, I feel like that kind of thing bothers you more. Like, I had a baseball coach that always called me Gustin, and, like, that's all he called me. He didn't even call me Grant. He just called me Gustin.
Gustin! Let's have a little more hustle over here!
Yeah, and that wasn't great.
Were you a good athlete?
No, I wasn't a great athlete. I played baseball for a long time, and I was pretty good at baseball, but, like, I ironically hated soccer because of the running. I thought it was just ridiculous to run back and forth and hope for the ball. So I quit most sports other than baseball until I was like 14, 15. I stopped baseball and it was like all theater.
I mean, you're Barry Allen. You're the Flash. So you've got to be athletic. You got to run. You got to look good running. There's a lot of people that don't look good when they run. My mother is one of them.
This is true. Yeah. No, I danced for years and years and years. I guess that wouldn't necessarily help me with running, but like I'm pretty aware of my body and I'm a pretty decent looking runner.
You are. You know how to run. You know the stride.
Yeah, well, they also actually, before the pilot, I can't remember his name. I was working with this like Olympic track and field sprint coach that coached Olympians and running backs in the NFL, and he helped me with my gait and like kind of what my arms were supposed to be doing with my legs. And so I did have some technical training before the show started.
Now there's a thing where, you know, for instance, when Tom Welling on Smallville had to, you know, fly, I mean, he didn't really fly, but you know, super speed or whatever he did, there was a certain look. Like if he went with his gut, it didn't look as good, even though it felt right. So like, could you put your arm here? Or can you do, did they have to sort of like go, hey, I know this seems like you're stupid and really awkward, but this looks better when you do this?
I actually, and not to like toot my own horn, but like on a regular basis, directors and sometimes even the cast will, that's the thing I'm complimented most on. It's just like, man, you really know how to move your body. I really think it's my dance background. Like, so, and honestly, like when a director or somebody comes in to show me do something, I usually have the thought like, please don't do that again. They usually look pretty awkward. That's one thing I have a pretty good grasp of. It's like how I'm supposed to look with a lot of my,
that's good. There's nothing like a good looking runner, you know, someone who just strides, just like that's what they want for those commercials for like,
well, and we don't run often a lot. Like sometimes for full, you know, body shots, they'll have me running, but like green screen stuff, I'm generally in a fixed stance and like doing my legs really hard. And a lot of the times we'll do just the first step. And other speedster guest stars and other people that run that come in, you tend to see people do same arm as leg. Like when you step forward, you do the same arm.
Yeah, no,
forward,
no, no.
But like, and then I always show them like trying to run like that.
And they're like, yeah, Grant Gustin is teaching me how to run. Unbelievable. He's been running for what, like 5 years? And he just knows how. He is the Flash. What's the major difference? I should know this because I didn't realize this. I, you know, when I'm saying I want to talk to you and interview you, I have thought about it, but I certainly haven't thought about it in a while. But then I'm like, wait a minute. All right, I played the Flash animated, but I was Wally West. You're Barry Allen. For an audience who doesn't know you, briefly, like what's the difference
between Barry and Wally?
Right. For someone who doesn't know,
early on, felt like our interpretation of Barry was kind of like a combination of the comics Barry and Wally, because I was a little younger. I wasn't really the age Barry usually was, and we did a lot of kind of quirky, awkward jokes, and I think that tends to usually fall more in the Wally realm.
Yes.
So yeah, it'd be hard for me to say, because I think where we landed with Barry, at least initially, was somewhere in between the two.
Right.
And we've kind of grown into more of a, I'm 30 now. I was 23, I think, when
I
was cast.
Oh my God, dude.
So like I've grown a little more into a mature kind of leader version of Barry. I'm not quite as awkward on a regular basis. We still have me kind of going there every once in a while, but it'd be hard for me to answer that just because our Barry has never been like the typical like comics Barry Allen.
Now, it honestly doesn't hurt my feelings at all. I mean, I obviously watched you. I don't like watch superhero shows constantly. I mean, I was on one. It doesn't mean I'm a huge fan of one. I am. I'm a fan. I love the world. I feel like I'm part of something that's very, you know, popular, especially now. And I feel like Smallville definitely was one of those first shows that spawned all these great shows like Flash and Arrow and Supergirl and all this. But were you a real fan? And by the way, did you do research? Like, I'm going to study all the people who played Barry Allen, or I'm going to, did you watch Justice League, which my, you know, the show I was on, DC, what is it called? Fuck.
I've seen episodes of it. I mean, I grew up like a big Superman fan. I didn't really read comics growing up. Like, they weren't, it was before digital, obviously, when I was still a kid, and it wasn't, I didn't know where to get comics. My parents didn't know where to get me comics, but I was a big fan of Christopher Reeve and that whole franchise.
Right.
When I started doing Flash, or when I was cast as Flash, the research I initially dove into was like reading comics, because I hadn't done that. So I got like Comixology, the app, and was, I think New 52 was brand new at the time. So I was reading like all those, and I still revisit the comics sometimes now. But again, our show is like kind of its own things. So it's, you know, you were on a CW show for years, and it's, CW is very much its own thing too. So we're, it's just its own tone and version of the character.
I landed Lex Luthor at 26 years old. You landed Barry Allen Flash at 23. Now, I certainly wasn't mature enough to carry a show at 23, let alone 26, let alone maybe just recently I'm able to maybe do that. So when you first find out, you know, I'm going to play this character, first of all, were you like, I'd much rather play Superman, or are there other characters that you'd rather play? Because it's probably true. Flash is probably not top two or three on your list.
I mean, I used to grow up like arguing with one of my best friends in high school, who was a big Flash fan, about why Superman was, you know, so much better than the Flash. So it for sure wouldn't have been like, if I like had to pick a superhero at the time. I mean, he's grown into being one of my, I mean, probably up there with Superman now, just because I'm so emotionally attached to the character now. But I don't think I also was, you know, at the time, like, no, I'd rather play Superman or Batman, because I'm not, I never even thought I'd get to be any superhero.
Right.
I'm not necessarily like, you know.
Isn't that the reality? We don't, like who would ever thought, like, honestly, I never thought that I'd be Lex Luthor, let alone anything.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure, like, look, you were a talented guy. You did a Broadway tour. You've acted your whole life. You've done all these things. You've had early success. But if somebody would have said to you when you were even 23, before you ever got the script, or even as an 18-year-old boy, a little boy, hey, you know, you're going to be the Flash, you'd be like, fuck off. Can you say fuck on the show?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have believed it or been in denial about it for sure. I mean, even when I got the audition, I didn't want to go, because I was like, I'm not going to get it. And I get a lot of audition anxiety. And, you know, I don't want to waste my time or their time. And the breakdown even was like mid-20s to early 30s, or mid-20s to early or to mid-30s. And again, I was like 23 and looked like I was 19 maybe. And I didn't want to go to the audition at all, because I thought it was so irrational to think that I could book it.
Well, you know, that's exactly with me. I was like, there's no way I'm playing Lex Luthor. No one's going to cast this guy. I'm not a joke. I'm look at me.
Yeah.
And my friends even said that. They're like, dude, no. And then you know what happened, Grant? We fucking zoned in, man. We turned the volume up, I mean, and we proved
it. You
worked
with David Nutter, right?
Oh man. He did yours too, right?
Yeah, he did our pilot, and he was in my second audition, I believe. And he called me after he had seen my tape, my initial audition with David Rappaport, casting director. And really early on, Nutter was like, I want you to get this. You're gonna get this. And that, from then on out, I was like, you know, tunnel vision honed in on getting it, because he had this belief in me that I was, and it made me have belief in myself.
But like, you already had some chops, you were still young, but at least, do you think without that theater background, you'd ever be able to make it through this?
No. I mean, I still to this day, I mean, I don't ever like even take my sides to set rarely. I'm very like obsessed with like the process of like getting the scenes down, and that's definitely my theater background. I mean, I really drill, not just like memorizing it, but the scene work. And it's not, you know, hopefully I do much more challenging stuff throughout my career. It's not like it's nothing against the writers. They do an amazing job, but it's not like it's the most in-depth, like emotional actor work on a regular basis, but I take it really, really, really seriously and really prepare. And
I did too. It's almost too much. Like I want to be too good almost. I want to I worked so hard that I thought, I'm like, most people don't do this. I can't, does anybody work this hard? And that's obviously silly to think that, but it was torturous actually, especially in the first seasons, like just trying to prove everybody, like I have to prove myself. And do you feel like you just want to know these lines inside out? You want to just be able to go on set and like, it's a play and let's go.
Yeah. I mean, I've come a long way with, taking a little pressure off myself, not taking it as seriously at times. I mean, I've never let up on the work, but I've always been really hard on myself, and I still am. I've put way too much pressure on myself early on and gotten my way a lot. And I think it shows, in my opinion, at least in the work, like how like wound up I was and how focused I was on getting it right. That, you know, it gets in your way for sure.
Do you do anything before you're doing your lines? Is there something like, you know, I remember Jesse Eisenberg, I was doing this movie that no one saw called Cursed, Wes Craven. And I remember every take, he would jump up and down and spin himself around right before action. And I would do, there were certain things I would do to get, if I had a certain scene, but he was doing this like just all the time. And like, it was a way of doing it. I'm like, hey, whatever it takes. Do you have I don't know if it's a tick, if it's a, because I develop tics from doing shit, kind of working myself up. Is there something you do, or you just kind of zoned in, relaxed, and let's go?
Well, not necessarily. I'm way more relaxed now than I used to be. I still have days that I'm really anxious or stressed about a really tough scene or emotional scene that I really want to get right. Like you said, I mean, I still sometimes will have that feeling of like really wanting to prove myself to just like the crew, like the people on set that are actually there watching. Like, I rarely find myself thinking about like, what's the audience going to think about this? I'm thinking about like, who's there watching,
Yes.
And that's the theater background, I think too.
Yes. It's almost like the instant gratification, that instant response. Like I remember JD, JD, does he ever work on The Flash?
He did our pilot and he did Arrow forever.
Great guy.
We always still talk when I'm on the Arrow set, or was on the Arrow set. But
great dude.
Yeah.
JD, I remember one episode early on, he just goes, hey man, really good, man. All right, really good.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And he gave me a thumbs up, and I just wanted that thumbs up all the time. Yeah. And when I didn't get it, I was like, JD.
There's only a handful of crew members that like I think feel like, or that I have that relationship with. But yeah, I mean, I don't think they realize how much that means to me when one of them comes up to me after a scene. It's like, yo, you crushed that. Like, I mean, it means the world.
It does, right? They don't. They think, oh, they don't want to hear. I think they're thinking they don't want to hear from the grip that they're good. We do.
Oh, I carry it with me forever. Like, I usually come home and tell my wife about, like, yo, I'm like, you know, still like buzzing from like on a scene and did it. Like, Neil, the boom op, came up to me afterwards and was like, yeah, crush that. Like it means, the world to me.
Yeah, you don't care about EW writing an interview saying Grant crushed it. You want Neil. You want.
Yeah.
I'm exactly the same way. Yeah, I feel that same way whenever I'm on a set. I always want to know people's names very quickly. I always want it to be like a family, because I think it's, for me, it's safety. Like, I feel like if I trust them and I could fail in front of them and they could just pick me up and I could be there for them, that there's something, I don't know if it's a good thing. It's just kind of what I do, that I want to feel safe when I'm doing my work, that I know people are rooting for me around me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, it goes back to like, not even just theater and doing shows, but like acting class in high school and college. And it's like, that's what the relationship that I had with my acting classes, you know, it's like, you need to feel safe enough to fail and that you're going to receive constructive criticism and we're going to pat each other on the back and we're going to learn from each other. And it, obviously like a boom up isn't going to come up and give me constructive criticism about my scene, but like, you do want it to feel like a safe place. And like, I can try whatever and look stupid and then get it right on the next take or whatever.
When did you know it was going to be huge? Did you see the pilot and go, okay, this, I'm going to be doing this for a while?
I mean, I hate to say that, like, because I had never even done a pilot, and I now know like how unlikely it is for pilots to go to series even, but it was really naive of me, but like, I was cast on Arrow first. It was,
right.
I did 2 episodes of Arrow, and I was supposed to do a 3rd episode of Arrow that was going to be a backdoor pilot, but the character was received so well, they decided to do a pilot, a standalone. And I knew from then, I was like, well, we'll get a series just because it's The Flash. And it, like, I never thought, like, it was never about me. It was just about, like, I'm so lucky that I landed this. And there's no way The Flash won't at least get a season one, you know,
right,
like coming off the heels of Arrow. And I mean, maybe it was naive of me, but I just, I thought at least, you know, 3 to 5 seasons felt like a given just because it was such an iconic character. And I was for sure ahead of myself, but I mean, and then meeting Tom Cavanaugh and being a big fan of Jesse L. Martin before we all came in. I mean, David Nutter called me to tell me Jesse was doing it because he knew what a big musical theater nerd I am.
Right.
And freaked out. And Hannah Baker, I mean, she's done all kinds of things, but like specifically, I remember when I was younger, like her being in Sky High, and I was like, man, this cast is like insane. Yeah, I had faith really early on that we were gonna be fine. The show was gonna be around for a while.
You know, I could always tell who's had a good upbringing in terms of like close with their parents, or, you know, we're loved, we're supported, we're parents are proud of. I could just tell. I just know these things. And I could tell with you that you had a good upbringing. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, my parents aren't together anymore, but they were both great parents. They're, yeah. And I mean, we had a great family in general. I'm still close with both my siblings. I talk to my dad, not as much as I talk to my mom, but I talk to both of them all the time.
Super supportive, yeah. Proud of you, love you, whatever you do is good.
As far as it comes to me and my career and like this journey I've been on, they've always, I mean, I didn't finish college. I first of all was getting my BFA in musical theater, which is like not a real thing that's going to help you in the world. And right. They were very supportive of that. And it was an expensive school at Elon University, which is not to belittle a BFA at Elon. It was an amazing training. And I'd recommend anyone going on that path if they, you know, want to do theater or be an actor at all. But then I dropped out to do the tour of West Side Story, the Broadway tour of West Side Story, and like had support from both my parents to do so, and it's led me here. So
the most beautiful sound I ever heard. Yeah.
I was a jet, so I didn't have to really sing at all.
When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. What is that bad? Sorry. I love musical theater as well. And you know, I read somewhere where you said, you know, you always wanted to do Broadway and then maybe TV and film. And it's sort of been, you know, except for that, you know, did the Broadway tour, but you've sort of switched positions. It's sort of like TV and film and career, but you always want to end up on Broadway.
Yeah, for sure. I just, when I was growing up and I was doing theater, my whole life was theater. From like, I started doing it at 10. And at like 14, it was like exclusively like my only hobby and what I did outside of school. And then, yeah, my whole life was just about musical theater. And around like 18, 19, I knew that like acting was kind of more specifically maybe what I was best at or wanted to follow that path. And I saw Hugh Jackman in The Boy from Oz when he was doing that on Broadway. And I knew that he was like a movie star essentially already. And I thought like, oh, do my theater path, find my way into film, and then once I get like big film jobs, I can just go back and do theater like Hugh Jackman. And I mean, and somehow is lucky enough to kind of be on that track now. Hopefully now like theater can be waiting for me when Flash is over.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it sounds ridiculous either way you put it. I'll become a movie star, then I'll do theater. And then, you know, it sounds like it's absolutely, that's, I think you have to have the mentality of like, this is what I'm going to do. And people will say, these are the odds and this is this. I don't know how many times people said, dude, come on. There's so many great actors out there. You don't understand. I know I'm going to do it. It's something you just know. And that success doesn't mean I'm going to be this and I'm going to, it's just that I know. I know innately that this is what I'm supposed to do. Should I do this? I don't know. I like it. It's cool. There's more of like,
yeah, I mean, I remember a conversation in college I had with a friend that I'm still friends with and has had a lot of success on Broadway on his own now. But I remember at the time, like it almost like he was frustrated with me. And like, I was almost getting under his skin that like, cause I'm not a cocky, like overconfident person by any means. I actually am like very insecure a lot of the time and beat myself very self-loathing. But like you said, like, I mean, I was like, why would I be doing this if I didn't think like, oh yeah, I'm going to be on Broadway. Oh yeah, I'm going
right.
to be able to do this. Like, why would I be doing this if I didn't believe that I'll have success doing it?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. I think there's some people that, you know, I have friends that just like, I know, I just want to do this. Should I do this? I don't. If you're saying, should I, or I don't, then there's no, there's those people. I want to be a doctor. I want to save people. This is what I want to do. There's not like, I don't know. Should I be a doctor or should I be?
Right.
I think you get to a point where like, I know what I'm destined to be, whether it's doing theater in a small town and not making any money or becoming a movie star or whatever. This is what I want to do.
Yeah. And I was fine with that. I mean, I also knew that that was a possibility and I knew I would have been happy, like doing regional theater in different like states and cities all the time. And like knowing that I was following my passion. And I definitely pictured that life sometimes too, you know,
yeah.
What was the least successful version of what I wanted to do. And I was fine with that.
Inside of You is brought to you by Rocket Money. I love Rocket Money. You know why? Because everyone should have Rocket Money because it just helps you save money. How many times do we have subscriptions that we don't even know we have anymore and we're paying so much money? It's throwing away money, Ryan.
I found one.
You did it. You told me. I got Rocket Money.
Okay, I found one. I'm embarrassed to say how long it's been going on, but thank you for finding it. My God. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's like you want to watch some show and you go, oh, I have to subscribe to this this streaming whatever. Mm-hmm. And you start streaming the show, you watch it, you leave, and you forget after this trial period it kicks in and it's they're charging terrible. You $10 a month. It is embarrassing.
Ugh.
You know, 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about. Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had, you know, like, oh, I have like 5 subscriptions. I could not believe it when they showed me I was paying for like 4 extra between, you know, streaming devices and fitness apps, delivery services. It's never ending. And thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. And I like that.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/inside. That's rocketmoney.com/inside. rocketmoney.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Factor. Factor Meals has changed my life. I am not spending tons of money ordering delivery service all the time anymore. I get delicious meals that are customized to my liking. I can make them in just 2 minutes. I have a menu of over 35 options delivered to my door. Calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, you choose. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. And these meals are delicious. I've had their chicken. I've had their chili. I have had their burgers. This is delicious. You're going to save money and no more stress going to the grocery store, Ryan. You don't want to go to the grocery store all the time when you can have your meals delivered right there for you.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. You simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Head to factormeals.com/inside50 and use code INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code INSIDE50 at factormeals.com/inside50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You know, I support this theater, Public Theater of Kentucky, PTK, and, you know, they always have problems and, you know, keeping the theater alive is not easy, the arts, and, you know, I try to be a part of that. And, you know, and I try to help raise money and I'm on the board or whatever. And but I always think, because it's, you know, the PTK Public Theater of Kentucky is right where I went to school and it's right there. And, you know, they have a museum there and they have the Lex Luthor coat there. I donated all that and it's a museum. And but I'm always like, God, I want to go back one day and do a play. It just keeps getting further and further away. I did so many plays in college, and I remember the camaraderie, the feeling right before you go on and putting on the makeup and going over lines and doing the stupid tongue twisters and getting to, I always used to get the stage like an hour early because of just nerves and to walk the my part where I'm going, and this is when I'm going to say this, and sitting in the corner. And there is something freaking cool about that. There is something that you can't really, it's, you can't describe it, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, I miss it. Like, I mean, you said earlier that instant gratification is like one thing. It's like, hold on, my dog is crying. Come here. This is my 14-year-old dog. And he, once he starts crying, it's...
You can hang out with us.
Yeah, as long as you're good. No, yeah. I mean, when I was doing West Side, I mean, it was a lot of dancing and a lot of warm-ups and stretching involved. But I was there probably 2 to 3 hours before the show every day.
Jesus.
You have your rituals and your routine. And,
no, it's okay. It's fine. Okay.
We said hi. All right. I'm going to send him out because he's just going to be really loud. Hey, go. LA, call Jet, please. What were we saying? Yeah, no theater. I miss that process for sure. I mean, there's nothing in TV is like the process of, you know, the rehearsal process for a show or the live experience of actually putting on the show. There's nothing similar about the two.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I see your parallel of like, not our parallel, because I'm a lot older than you. Well, I guess I'm 17 years older than you. I could have had you if you think about it. I don't want to think about it. But, you know, you think about the parallels of like doing theater, going through college. And, you know, I thought like, you know, I'm going to get married. I'm going to have a kid. I'm going to do this. And, you know, I'm 47. I'm single and I've done all these things, but it seems like you've done so much so early. Broadway tour, you know, you did the Glee thing, which was really cool. And then boom, catapulted. Here you are, the Flash. And you're married now. You might have a kid. Who knows, right?
No kid, yeah. Yeah,
you might. You have a dog. It seems like you have a. It seems like you've got your shit together. Unless I'm missing something. Is there something that you're still? You know, people say content. Are you content? Or I don't think I'll ever be content.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely. I know how. I'm very aware, especially in certain moments, of how lucky I am and how differently things could have gone up until this point. But, you know, I also like there's plenty when it comes to my career or life. There's plenty of things that I feel like I've missed out on. I mean,
What have you missed out on?
Like, I mean, during The Flash, I mean, not to say that like it's been so amazing, but what we're 7 years in now in War Six, we finished 6 years, and the past four hiatuses now, I have had a hiatus project that has fallen through because of Flash. So I feel like there's a lot of other opportunities out there that have kind of got like film and stage that have gone away because of schedule conflicts, you know? So you just can't have everything. I mean, it's been all Flash for 6 years, which I know you know all too well.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, if you look back right now, I definitely don't have, I mean, I'm sure people say, I don't have regrets. In fact, my uncle got tattooed, no regrets. I'm like, fuck, that's a lot. I don't think, you know, I don't think that, you know what, I under that you should put like a caption like, not entirely true.
Yeah.
Because we all have regrets.
I don't have regrets though. I mean, I would never trade off where I'm at right now to be somewhere else in my life or in my career. I mean, I have like, I think one thing I really struggle with, me and my wife were talking about it recently, and me and my mom have the conversation all the time. She's the one that really pointed it out to me. Like, I have imposter syndrome for sure. Like, I don't think I ever deserve anything that I get, or that like I'm not, you know, worthy, or I didn't work hard enough for it, or someone else worked harder or was more talented. So like, that's something I struggle with all the time, you know, just being like, okay with where I'm at and feeling like I deserve it and, or earned it. But like, I think that's one thing that really makes me feel lucky all the time is I don't know how I got to where I'm at, like almost ever. Like even when I was doing West Side, I mean, I should have been a junior in college at the time and all my friends still were. And I was living all of our dreams and like doing the Broadway tour of West Side Story. And like, every day was like, why me, man? Like, why am I so lucky? And I've kind of every step of the way felt like that. For sure.
I can tell you why. Because that's the thing. It's hard because when people's perception of you is obviously different from the perception you have of yourself. Obviously, you know, I'm talented, this and that. But like, I look at you and I'm like, he's a good looking guy. He's really talented. But all that aside, the best trait about you from just knowing you, and I think which is the most important with anybody, is who they are as a person. People see that. And if it translates, they want to be around you. They like you. You know, you're very likable. That's a huge thing. I always tell the story of James Gunn told me the story, and he directed Guardians of the Galaxy. And so in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Kurt Russell was telling the story about Escape from New York. And the director, John Carpenter, was like, you know, I don't know. They just want me to make the character Snake Plissken more likable that Kurt Russell plays. And he goes, why? I'm likable. I'm just a likable guy. And I think that's true. And so I think that's kind of like, have you ever had those moments where you're like, I don't know. Barry seems kind of like a dick right now. Too much of like a, like,
You know, Barry's a dick all the time. I mean, pretty frequently.
Yeah, that's true.
He is for sure. You know,
so you can relate to that, but you're innately a likable dude. I'm sure you could play a dick and a weirdo, and you could put an eye patch on and kill somebody in a movie, and people are like, that guy's an asshole. But there's something innately likable about you. And I think it's humble for you to say that, you know, do I deserve this? There's a lot of other actors. I've done that. My whole problem is I never fit in. I've never felt like I fit in. I feel uncomfortable around a lot of celebrities. I put on an air of like, look at me, I'm confident. I'm, you know, and I could turn that on. But
me too.
But the reality is I'm always kind of going, oh shit, because you want to be liked, you want to be accepted. And that's, I've talked about that. Have you ever dealt with anxiety in your life, any kind of depression or any kind of?
Since probably 4 or 5, I've dealt with like anxiety, depression. Like I had really weird, anxious type dreams as like a really young kid, and I mean, it's, I don't want to get too into it, but like we, before we got married, we started doing couples therapy just to like, you know, be ready for marriage before there was really nothing going on in the marriage. And then all kinds of things for both of us start to like come to the surface, and as good for us as a couple and like as individuals and all kinds of, I knew I had always dealt with anxiety, but putting like, you know, getting pinpointed ideas about where things started and why you were feeling that way. I mean, anxiety is ever present in my life for sure.
Well, you saw what happened with Steven, you know, obviously we've talked about it a million times, and I thought that was so brave. And like, I think nowadays you could sort of talk about that thing, especially in this show. It without a doubt, I didn't know this was going to happen, but it helps. It just helps people. They're like, oh my God, this guy's so successful. And he deals with anxiety. How does he deal with it? And it's just like, you know, you're not saying this is the answer to fix your anxiety. This is like, this is what I do to help me. So when you say, hey, I went to couple therapy because I wanted to be a better husband. I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better man. I want to be better on this. And I think just talking about your shit with someone who could be objective and someone who could just, how could it not help? If someone's professional, obviously.
I mean, I would recommend any kind of therapy for anybody for sure. I mean, it's been really helpful in my life. I don't do it enough.
What's the thing that's the biggest thing in therapy that you found that you sort of heard, acknowledged, embraced, worked on it, and you're like, wow, that helped me exponentially?
I mean, just in my relationship, and I'm still working on it, and it in moments it helps, and in other moments I like forget to think about it, but like I'm not always as good at just like really, really listening and hearing what's going on with my wife, because she's more level-headed than me and more calm and less stressed out, and I'm always talking about what I'm stressed about, or like, and I just think like, oh, if she's got something going on, she'll share that with me. But you know, we're different, and she needs me to like talk to her and like ask her what's up and really listen and hear her. Where I'm thinking like, oh, she'll offer it up if she wants, because that's what I'm doing constantly. Like I can't ever shut up, and she just isn't that way. So in our relationship, that's been huge, and it's something that I'll probably be working on until the day I die. Honestly,
dude, I'll tell you what. That right there is fucking profound, because it, you know what? If it doesn't help anybody else, it helped me just now, because I am like this too. I don't know if it's because, you know, sometimes we're selfish. We're this, we're actors. We're fucking, we're in our heads. Right. We're thinking of a million things. I got ADD. And so we're constantly open about everything that's going on where most people aren't. So we assume
I expect her to be that way, but she's just, she's not, you know, we're different.
We assume they're fine, but we need to stop for a moment and go, all right, I need to fuck off for just a minute. And how are you? Seriously, because I'm a self-indulgent prick.
And I don't ever think like, oh, I'm a selfish person, or like I'm all up in my own feelings, because like I am constantly also worried about her and other people and what's going on in the world. And it's not like I'm just thinking about me and my problems, but like my anxiety is like kind of at the forefront of like everything, including our relationship, instead of, like I said, finding out what are her anxieties, or what is she thinking about, what is she feeling.
Right,
so it's something I'm definitely working on.
Dude, it's awesome. I think that's sound. It wasn't even advice you gave, but it's, I guess inadvertently it is. It's like, you know, listening. It's hard. It's like sometimes just to take a minute and go, I want to say a million things right now, because it's self, and just not saying anything and just going, talk to me. Just tell me everything you're thinking. It's an exercise.
It's helped me on set too. I mean, because like we said, like and it sounds like you're the same way. Like I cared a lot about getting things right. And then sometimes I think like, there's no way anyone around me cares as much about getting it right as I do. So then I start to project that. And I've like, especially earlier on, I used to, you know, I'm not a dick, but like I can get stressed out and like be a dick in moments because I really care about getting it right. And I think other people don't. And I think I've come a long way in my flash journey of knowing we're each dealing with our own shit. First of all, we're all stressed about the work in our own way. And trying to keep my shit to myself a little bit and be there for other people a little bit more, instead of assuming like they're not feeling what I'm feeling, you know?
This is fun.
Yeah, man.
It's easy, right? You having a good time?
Yeah.
I like this. You know, it's funny because I tried to get you on a long time ago and you were in Vancouver, and I go, oh, I'm fucking pestering him. Now I'm the guy who's pestering him to do an interview. I used to be the actor.
No, I remember and I felt bad, but like we touched on this when we were talking in emails. Like I don't have the excuse right now that I have my work, but like, I'm always like, I say no to everything because the work is so constant and I just want to stay focused on it and do it to the best of my ability. So like, I rarely do even like, not just podcasts, but like interviews or like appearances. I don't do a lot of conventions. Like, I just don't do a lot of extra stuff outside of the work in Vancouver.
Did you think in the beginning they were sort of like, young kid, we'll take advantage of them, interviews, this, because eventually you probably stepped up going, all right, I think I could say something now. You know what? No. Yeah, I'm gonna sleep in.
I mean, not really, to be honest. I let it stress me out more and then still said no, like season one and stuff. But like, I mean, I did some stuff early on and thought it was really cool. Like I went to New York a lot, like more than I do now, the first couple seasons, and was completely stoked about it. Cause like my brother lives there. A lot of my best friends live there. And it's, you know, it's cool to do, like, you know, it was Kelly and Michael at the time, like the live with Kelly and Michael and like Good Morning America. And like that kind of thing's cool. I haven't done a lot of it. I did like Seth Meyers, I think, one year, and like, it's, you know, it was really cool. Like you see those shows and that's like a thing where you're like, oh, I've made it. Like, so it's not like, I don't think it's cool or I don't want to do it, but I really do care more about making sure I'm prepared for my scenes when I show up on set. And if I feel like that's going to take away from that, then it's not hard for me to say, you know, no, I don't have time for that. And it's not bullshit. It's just like, I really don't have time to fly to New York this week. And we've got a huge week next week and I need to stay here, get ready for it.
Yeah. You do all the crossovers and shit. And I've talked to Stephen Amell about this, and I'm like, and Danielle, I don't know. It was hard enough just doing one show, but when you're just doing all these, I mean, you probably think they're cool when you see them, but shooting them probably isn't that much fun, I'm guessing.
It's interesting because it's like the idea of them is like not fun at all. To like, you like, I feel like some people might say the opposite, but for me, like thinking about doing them, you're just like, I don't want to do it this year. Like, it's so, like you said, it's so hard. It's so hard to make one episode of television for 8 days. And we're making 3 to 4 episodes of television over the course of like 3 or 4 weeks. And with production schedules that just don't make sense. And like, there are moments where like, it's insane and just not human, the type of conditions and hours that we're in. But like, I'd be lying if I said that it wasn't like some of the more fun, more memorable moments didn't happen like during those crossover shoots. You dread them a little bit, but then when you're there and it's like Melissa and like Brandon Ralph and Steven, and like we all like are so different but have all these things in common, and we're just like never get to see each other, and you're laughing constantly, and it's fun too. I mean, it's hell and it's like the most fun you have.
How many suits do you have? How many flash suits do you have? And do they start to smell after like a day of wearing that shit?
Yeah, like one time wearing them, and they do their best to clean them, but like they stink. I mean, I on a regular basis, if we're on location, and I take pictures with fans that are waiting on set. Like I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm Grant. I'm a bacteria infection. Here we go.
Yeah,
it's like, gee, it smells like Brie today.
Yeah. I think it like. Right now with the current suit that I have, I want to say there's probably like 2 hero suits and maybe a third that like we constantly like mess up with like pick points for harnesses and stuff. But sometimes I only have like 2 or 1 because one gets destroyed and I'll have to get a pick point in that with a harness. And then like that day they need to, or like while it's on me, they're like stitching it shut because we only have 1 suit. So
right.
It just kind of depends on like what week it is, to be honest.
What's the one Broadway show right now that comes to mind that you would love to do? You'd love for it to be your first Broadway show when you're able to do Broadway. That one Broadway show that if that was it.
I don't know. I mean, like, that's a hard question. Cause there's, first of all, I don't get to see a lot. I used to get to see way more before I was doing Flash, but like at any given time, I've seen like nothing that's open on Broadway. Darren, Chris, a buddy of mine, you know, that I'm sure you know of, because he won like every award you could win like 2 years ago for that Versace show. But he was on Glee with us, and he was great when I came on Glee, and probably more than anyone else, like knew he was from the theater world and knew that like I had done nothing, and like helped me understand what everybody's job was and really helped me feel welcome. He was about to do American Buffalo with Lawrence Fishburne. Ooh, and Sam Rockwell.
That's heavy.
And I don't think I've ever been as envious as I was when I saw that announcement. I'm actually like currently, I'm reading all kinds of plays right now. And that's what I'm reading right now. Is American Buffalo. Wow. A straight play is, I think, more now what I'd love to be doing. I got to see To Kill a Mockingbird this past season, and I had a couple friends that were in that. And I mean, that would be another, like, it was with Ed Harris at the time, and like something like that, I can't even imagine getting to do.
Can we do it, Mice and Men, and I'll play Lenny?
Yeah, you're gonna have to gain like 30 pounds, but
I could. No, that's gonna be tough. I tried again, but it goes to my face. Now that I got this beard, I said, you know, screw it. I'm growing a beard for quarantine. I see you're growing a beard. You're probably right. And you know, I got the email. Hey dude, I love you. Your beard looks terrible.
No, it looks good.
Well, this is a bad angle.
I'm a beard guy too, though. Like I like beards on like all dudes. I think beards are cool. I'm always jealous when Steven grows a beard. I think his beard's really cool. Like, cause chin part grows like really long.
That son of a bitch. He's like perfect. You said something.
We were actually watching New Girl last night, and it was his episode, and he took his shirt off, and you're just like, I think out loud, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Son of a bitch, I can't get away from this. Yeah. You said that. You said you wouldn't wear, you told Stephen Amell, I won't wear a t-shirt on camera with you.
Around him,
I have to wear a blazer, because look at you. It's true. It's like, I've always been thin. I've always been not really buff. And then I always had Tom Welling around me. So whenever I had to do a scene, like I go, you have to give me 2 months notice so I could work out so hard that I kind of look good.
Yeah. I don't even do like, you know, we're not a typical
shirtless
CW show in that respect, with like the lead being like beautiful and shirtless all the time. Like I really early on was like, I did a few and then I was like, all right guys, like I'm not taking my shirt off anymore. Like that's not me.
Right.
That's not who you got. I'm like, honestly, during this quarantine, it's the most I've worked out since Flash started, just because I have time now.
So. Yeah, I'm starting to like work out. I'm cooking for myself. Yeah. And I like the beard. I think you look good with a beard.
Nice.
More astute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Inside of You is brought to you by Nutrafol. Well, it's apropos. It's, you know, it's good that we're talking about Nutrafol because, well, hair thinning impacts a lot of us. In fact, me, it's starting to affect me. Over half of us will experience hair thinning at some point in our lives. It's not only common, it's normal. And you should join over 1 million people who are doing something about it with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement. Number one, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding.
Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is it actually could be much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows.
Nutrafol's whole-body approach multi-targets possible underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
When it comes to thinning hair, there are many possible root causes at play, and Nutrafol helps address them through a multi-targeted whole body approach.
Nutrafol helps support hair growth from within by targeting possible key root causes of thinning, stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health.
While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy.
In Nutrafol's own clinical study, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage after taking Nutrafol men's hair growth supplement for 6 months, and 86% of women saw improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific possible root causes.
With Nutrafol, getting help building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required, free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. You could see results in 3 to 6 months.
Take the first step to help you see visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code INSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code INSIDE.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE.
Find out why 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know I love BetterHelp. They've been around here a long time. And I am convinced that therapy is such an important part of our lives. The stigma, I think, is going away, and more people are veering towards therapy and helping themselves because it's all about the future. You know, if you can work on yourself now, you're going to be a better, stronger person later. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, folks, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. And maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. Therapy with BetterHelp is just a good place to start when you want to understand you better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And all you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/inside today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/inside. Well, here's the surprise was the fucker, Stephen Amell was going to pop on. And he was like, you know, his thing. And he's been like, I want to come on. Can I come on? So I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's going to probably do an intro. He's going to do an intro. Is there anything you want me to tell him?
That I'm envious of his beard.
His body.
And his bandana, his quarantine bandanas are really something special. I don't know if you've seen them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been on his thing.
His whole quarantine wardrobe. I'm like, is this like the Palm Spring effect? Or like, what's going on? Like, it's like. It's cool. It's like just not, I've never seen him look like that.
Jesus. These are some questions from some fans from my Patreon. Mary B, it's called Shit Talking with Rosenbaum. They're quick. You can answer them quick. If you could go back in time with no worry about the butterfly effect, what historical figure would you like to meet?
Yeah. Christopher Reeve, even though he's not really a historical figure. Like he that was probably one of my early, I guess he is kind of, but that was like an early hero for me. And what happened to him was just so tragic. And I know he made a whole second life out of it, was able to inspire, you know, all kinds of people and do all kinds of positive things, but it was just awful. And I was devastated when he passed away. So if I could have known him in his prime and like even gotten to work with him or something, I mean, that would have meant a lot to me. You got to work with him, as you're saying that, he was on Smallville.
He was on, Tom had his scene. He had his scenes with Tom, but I did get to meet him. And I went to a Christopher Reeve Foundation event in Puerto Rico, and I got to present him a blanket signed by the cast at Madison Square Garden for like a charity hockey game. And yeah. I got teared up, man. I just got emotional. I mean, I just said, hey, I was on Smallville. I didn't get to work with you, and I'm really bummed about that. But I love you, and I've always loved you. And just thank you for being a true Superman. And he was just awesome. And we just sat there, and he said a few words, and yeah, talk about facing the most adverse, just facing such horrific circumstances and then going, I'm going to keep going and I'm going to be better and I'm going to do more for people and I'm going to be a better man than I ever thought I was.
I mean, he probably touched more people's lives because of his accident, which is crazy. Ugh.
Yep. It's crazy. Jeanette, what do you miss most about the Tidewater area? Lived in Portsmouth many, many years. She did.
Yeah, cool. I don't know. I loved growing up there. It felt like it had everything. I mean, the Tidewater area, Norfolk, Virginia Beach was the cities that I spent the most time in. It is really different from like Virginia as a state. And I mean, it has the beaches, you know, it has like the city, small city, but I had a really normal, happy life for the most part growing up. And it's a cool area. I mean, I'm a big, Tides fan, the Norfolk Tides. We like go to those AAA team. We go to those games a lot. And just the Governor School, where the Performing Arts High School that I got to go to growing up was really special, is a really special place. And just trips to the beach with friends and just, you know, simple life of being a teenager.
Nico P, who's your favorite 90s character? I mean, you were born in 90, but who's your favorite character? The one thing you remember watching going, I'd like that.
The first thing that just popped into my head, I thought, was Zach Morris.
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, baby. And Corey. What's Corey's last name from Boy Meets World? Matthews.
So you watched those shows?
Oh, yeah.
Sweet. Did you watch Smallville? You didn't.
I didn't, actually.
Sorry, fine.
I was a big Superman fan, and I think because of that, I didn't.
Of course, like, fuck that. Rosie, what was your favorite memory so far in The Flash? Can you remember one moment where you're like, I couldn't stop laughing, or I cried, I got emotional, something where it was just that moment, that night, something happened, and you just were like, or just, whatever.
I mean, there's a specific moment that, like, I'll never forget. I mean, honestly, the first thing that came to mind was just, like, times with Tom Cavanaugh in general that, like, we can't stop laughing, just like bits that get stupider and stupider as we go, but like funnier and funnier, and then we're like, we remember for weeks. And like sometimes, like when they're really funny, like some of these crew members that compliment us on scenes will like come up to us and be like, man, I was telling my wife about that bit you guys were doing, and like that's so gratifying too, to hear like, man, our bit made it home with like a crew member to his wife, like but a specific moment I'll never forget was the season one finale and shooting the scene. To this day is maybe the best scene I've shot on the show, where Barry goes back, he thinks, to save his mom from getting killed by the Reverse Flash, and then stops because he realizes he has to let it happen. But then he gets to have this moment with her as she's dying, and Barry's like an adult, and she has the moment of recognition and knows that it's him and doesn't understand why, but accepts that it is. And we had this crazy emotional scene. And I mean, I'll never forget shooting that scene, or the like subsequent hours at home after, where like I couldn't shake it. Like I was in the shower, like still just like hysterically crying like my mom had died in front of me for real. Like it, like as an actor, was just something that like I still draw from.
Yeah, when you can draw that, that is just like the most powerful thing ever. If you could use an experience to get you somewhere, there's, I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think for what the reason I always still draw from it is like that storyline is still present with Barry on the show. So it's like, I don't have to fake, I've never lost a parent, but like, I don't have to fake anything when I do that storyline. Cause I really have those visceral, like emotional reactions to thinking about losing Nora Allen, Barry's mom. Cause it, I felt like I experienced it like for real. Like it wasn't like something I read in the script.
Did you, maybe a stupid question. Did you feel like calling your mom after that?
I think I did. I mean, yeah. I mean, and I told her that, I mean, it was crazy. Like I probably cried talking to her about it, that it was like, I really felt like I experienced losing you. Like it was, yeah. I mean, it was crazy.
You know, Lisa asks, you know, you go from, a villainous character like on Glee to a hero character in The Flash. I mean, what's harder to portray, and what do you like better? You like playing the hero, or you like mixing it up? You're an actor, right?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'd say like it'd be fun to play a villain just because I've done so much Barry Allen over the years. But I also loved getting the opportunity to play this character that's just like innately, I mean, has its flaws, but it's just like so good and like so well intentioned and. He has his downfalls and faults at times, but like really puts other people before himself. And I've learned a lot, you know, from Barry over the years, and I love playing Barry. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, I definitely want to shake things up outside of Flash and play other kinds of things. But I also would, you know, I like playing hero.
Rock says, what's your favorite musical? I mean, we kind of went into that. You said play, maybe American Buffalo, kind of see, but it's hard for you to kind of, but musical.
Yeah, musical. I mean,
you ever see Blood Brothers?
The one I'm the most like emotionally attached to is West Side Story, just because I did it for a year.
Right.
And, yeah, it's the only one I've done for that amount of time. But like, I've had a lot of great experiences with musicals over the years, and there's a lot of things like even like campy silly ones I've never done but always loved and wanted to get to do is like Hairspray. Like I always wanted to play Lynn Clarkin in Hairspray. Like Matthew Morrison I think was like one of my early Broadway kind of heroes, and that's always been a role I've wanted to play.
What music, like in the past, and this isn't a question, this is just me, I'm thinking, like, do you have to, you're musical, you're trained, what do you sing around the house? Like I don't want to hear the new stuff. I want to hear, do you sing any 70s or 80s or 90s, something I would know.
I used to sing way more. I think like when I left musical theater and started doing Flash, like unlike Melissa, who like things pop into her head constantly whenever we're working together, she's always singing obscure musical theater references. And she's now married to my buddy, Chris, who was a musical theater major with me at Elon University.
Oh God.
So their whole household is like musicals. Like my wife like wishes she could sing, but cannot sing at all. And like knows nothing about musical theater. So I've kind of like left it behind me a lot these past few years.
But I mean like 70s or 80s music or 90s or disco.
If I was just like music that I sing a lot.
Yeah.
And I haven't recently, but like I've always loved Jason Mraz, and like I can sing his whole catalog. Like if we're in the car and I put Jason Mraz on, like 120 songs can go.
What's that fish song?
Like, how do you know this one?
What's the like, fish song? Fishing or?
Fishing?
I don't fucking know. What's the one Jason Mraz song? What's the one song that you just, it always goes through your head? You just every once in a while, I just start singing it.
God, I mean, like, I don't even like, they don't even need to be going through my head. I just like, if one comes on, I'll just start singing it. And like, I don't even realize I'm singing it. Like, I know all of his songs. I mean,
I get it. You're not going to sing. It's fine.
No, I'm not going to sing.
But do you warm up and shit when you sing, right?
I always was bad about that. Even when like I used to sing on a regular basis, like that's like dance and singing. It's like I was always pretty good at both, more dancing than singing actually. But like I hated going to ballet class. I hated going to dance class. I hated stretching and warming up. Like I hated doing vocal exercises to get ready to
sing. You're a rebel. Like,
but when it comes to acting, like I like the preparation, and like that's when I kind of started to realize at 18, 19, 20, like, it was more where my passion lay. It was like really focused on like trying to become a great actor. I didn't care as much about trying to become a great dancer. I just kind of was good at it.
Do you get nervous for auditions? Do you get nervous for that audition? Do you get really like in your head? Does it take you like, I need to take two to get into it?
Not always. Usually I like, even when I make tapes actually at home, I don't harp on it. Like I like to do it in like one and done, sometimes two. Like I don't do them over and over again. But like I get nervous, like even like Comic-Con, like I can't eat the morning before Comic-Con. Like when I'm really nervous, like I don't eat during the day. Like it's really bad. Like it's one of the reasons I'm so thin. Like anxiety rules my stomach.
Me too.
I've actually just in the past few, like 6 months or so, that's started to change where I'm like eating more, working out more, and like my stress levels are a little lower. But yeah, no, I get really nervous and it like dictates my appetite for sure.
I love it. Well, dude, this has been incredible. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, and I heard so many good things about you from, I mean, everybody. There wasn't anybody. Wait, there's this one person who's no. Everybody's like, you know, this is a normal great guy who works really hard and is pleasant to work with. I mean, you always want to hear like, you know, I mean, we're human, so I'm sure there's times on set where you don't throw a Christian Bale, but do you ever flip out? Dad, why are we filming? You ever do that?
Yeah, and I've gotten way better. I mean, I pretty much don't do that anymore, but I used to like season one, season two, I had in my head that like being an, and season to season three, probably being a number one was like part of my job was to keep the day going and to like, cause I knew the show better than like the guest director or whatever, but like, I didn't have enough respect for guest directors the first few seasons, knowing that like they had done this a lot more than I had done it and they knew what they were doing.
Right.
I had gotten into my head from, you know, partly from myself, partly from other people telling me that like, I'm the only person they're going to listen to if I tell them to like, let's move, you know, why aren't we shooting? Why aren't we shooting? And like, I came to realize that like that type of behavior didn't help, but it stressed me out more. Like, I don't want to be that guy, but like I had at times become that guy and I don't do that kind of shit anymore. Like I'll have conversations with the director about things that are going on, but I tend to not publicly declare things on set anymore.
There's something to be said about, you know, I think we've all done that. We've all like anywhere, it doesn't have to be acting or whatever. It's just a waste of energy. It's like this day, what am I saving? 10 minutes, 20? I'm probably losing and it's just causing me grief and stress.
Yeah.
I'm here to film. Let's just film.
Yeah. I mean, that was the biggest downside, honestly, of having the lack of experience that I had when I started doing Flash was, and then suddenly being the number one was, I think I could have learned watching other people like that did it the right way that I don't, you know, it doesn't help. It's just wasted energy to come in and like think that you're helping the day move along by like declaring that like we need to be moving. It's like everyone knows that. We're supposed
we
to
get
be
it. Moving. You're 23 years old too, by the way. I'm telling you, I don't know what would have happened if I would have like, I mean, I was 26 and thank God I wasn't lead. I was second to Tom, but you know, but I had been working for a while. I just feel like I wasn't ready to carry a show, and to kudos to you for like being able to do it, especially like the stress and the anxiety. I've got the whole show's on my back and you could start really thinking about these things. And that's also what I've learned now is just stop thinking about tomorrow. You really, honestly, it sounds stupid. Just think about today, right now. What do you have to do? I have to do these lines. I have to be as great as I can. And that's it. I don't have to think about these other days right now because I'm going to stress the shit out of myself.
Right.
I think that's probably what you eventually did was just, okay, I'm here. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, really just in the past like year and a half, like I realized, you know, I could be a lot easier on myself and thus like the whole production. If like, I didn't put so much pressure on myself to feel like my number one role like entailed more than it actually entailed, which is just learning my scenes and being, you know, the most prepared, friendliest person I can be.
How many seasons left is a Flash?
One on my current contract, just season 7.
That's gonna be a tough one when they throw money at you and they're like, hey.
Yeah, the conversations actually had started already for adding a potential 8th and 9th, and then this pandemic happened and everything has stopped. So, and we don't know when we're going back, and we didn't finish our last, what should have been our last two episodes of season 6. So, and it's, and now we're not, I mean, we might do those scripts when we go back for seven to lead into what we were going to film anyway. I don't really know what the plan is. But we don't know when we're back, and I don't know when we're going to continue the negotiation talk. So I don't know.
Yeah. Right now. Well, there's two thoughts too. One, well, if I do sign on for a season 8-9, you know, I'll be fine for quite a while. I might have a family, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this, then I won't have to worry as much. The other is like, you know, I've done the show long enough and I made some money and I just want to go do my own thing. So it's kind of that.
Yeah, there's both sides to it for sure. And like we touched on earlier, the thing that makes it hard to keep doing it is like, I really have lost like three films in one theater opportunity that were like locked, set, ready to go. And then those things had to push like 2 weeks, and my whole hiatus is 2.5 months. So like they had to recast me.
Yeah.
And that's hard to deal with. That's hard to swallow. And then I had another one this hiatus, and then this happened. So like that movie's not happening, obviously. That's the frustrating part.
Yeah. Well, remember this too. Anybody who's like, you know, you got your friends, you got your whatever, but I love my agent. He's nice. And you know, the guys at the studio, everybody's nice. But everybody's going to be like, this is what you want to do. This is how you want that. Because everybody gets money. Everybody makes money. So yeah. Just make sure whatever decision, you know how to do this. Just make sure the decision's in your gut. This is what I want to do.
I don't think a wrong decision. I mean, listen, I want to do more too. Like when I went into this, like to the amount of seasons that you guys did, like nobody gets to do that. So like to reach that milestone, there's also something incredibly like we did that. And I don't know. I mean, I'm glad too that I was like locked into the contract that I was locked into. Cause like we were talking about those earlier stressful seasons. Like if I could have, like there were plenty of crew members that like walked after season 2, like I probably would have also. Cause I was just like, this is too stressful. Like this is too hard. The hour's ridiculous. Like I would have just walked after season 2 if I wasn't like locked down. Glad like this, you know, that I've been on the journey I've been on, and I'll ride it as long as I can, probably.
Yeah, and you got great fans. I look at the comments. I look at the love. I love the support. I go to the cons, and you know, the fans are honestly what keeps it all going. I mean, without them, it is. It's just unbelievable. Like Smallville is over 10 years now, and it's still. I go there, and there's a new resurgence on Hulu, and I meet these kids, and it's just such an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing to have. Who would have thought? And like, you have millions and millions of fans, and.
Yeah, I mean, like I get to be the Flash for the rest of my life, which is, you know, pretty special.
And I get to be one of the animated ones.
Yeah, no, you're like a lot of people's favorite Flash. Like,
I only did like, two seasons and I was animated. I don't know.
I see that a lot, though.
I don't know how. It surprises me because I was, it's just my voice. I know people love it and they're like, oh, that, but you embody, you're the physical and the. I love it.
People love you as the Flash, though, man.
Well, I love you as the Flash.
I see you on the like best Flash lists all the time.
Well, look at my followers. I think they like you better. All right, you got a lot more followers, buddy. But look, I just appreciate all the fans. And today, like, I really appreciate you for coming on. And hopefully, when this is all over, one day we could hang out. You know, I'd love that. And
yeah, come in and do it like an in person inside of you too.
But that would be great. Down the road. Hopefully this will clear up and we won't have to zoom it up. Yeah. But hey, got us together.
Yeah, man.
So thank you for allowing me to be inside of you, my friend. And good luck with the wifey and the dog, the 14-year-old cutie. What's the dog's name?
Yeah.
Jim?
I actually have a tattoo of him.
Dude, that's great.
It is. Jet. Isn't it amazing?
Oh, that's cute. I got to get a tattoo of mine. Mine's like 12. Irv, he's getting old.
Yeah, I've had him. He's the most, since I moved to LA, he's the only thing that's been consistent the past 10 years.
Yeah, you gotta just love as much as you can, man, because you know how much longer do I have. It's always like, yeah, you know,
I've literally for like 4 or 5 years I'm like, you could die at any moment.
I know it's fucked. I hug him and then when I get mad I go, fuck, you could die any minute. That's macabre. I shouldn't.
Yeah,
all right, dude, I love you. Hey, thanks so much for this.
Yeah, man, thank you.
All right, pretty fantastic. Thank you, Grant, for being so open. And you know, when he talked about therapy with his wife, and you know, people don't want to talk about that stuff, but I think it's starting to happen. Podcasts like this podcast, other podcasts, the mental health thing, you're just gonna get better, you're just gonna feel better. Yeah, these people just don't want to talk about stuff. And what happens, you think that they're gonna get better? I'm just gonna deal with it myself, I'm gonna ignore my wife, or I'm just gonna, man, come on. He's brave and he's awesome for doing that. This is how you how relationships survive. They actually talk about their issues. My parents never talked about shit. I don't think they went to a therapist, did they? I mean, obviously they've been divorced forever. Big shout out to my patrons. As I always say, without these folks, the show just wouldn't be as good. Truly, truly, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Those who pledge when they don't have to, who give a little extra. And by the way, the Patreons, they know you get a lot of stuff. I try to respond to you. I try to, you know, do as much as I can. YouTube lives, extra bonus footage inside of me. I'm always working on stuff to make you guys happy. And it's a community. So if I don't get back to you right away within a couple of days, you know, I try. But it's so fun. And check out Patreon. And here are the top tier patrons. Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Yukiko, love Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico, my made man, Barry I, Angelina G Lee, Jerry W, Kevin R, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Bordex, Jason W, Tiana, Andrew C, Allison L, Mark A, Jason D, Chris, Raj, Sean W, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Rox Raccoon, Samantha M, Hamza B, Stacy Beth, Carly T, Vanessa in the sky with Rosie, Reem, I just like to say Reem, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Neil W, Tabitha 272, Kimberly E, Melissa C, Mikey, oh, that's cute, Jake M, Catherine M, Jack S, I love you, buddy, Carly S, Judith D, Ramira, I love it, the Ramira, Chris F, and I just want to say Bordex one more time. You know, thank you for all the letters from fans. Remember, you could write in hello@insideofyoupodcast.com. I eventually get these, and I do read them. Now, I don't read all of them online, but on the podcast, but I do read them. I think you know that about me now. And by the way, I've been going around and, you know, doing my due diligence. So if you see little messages or responses online, I do look at those. It may take me a long time, but I respond. Sometimes I respond right away. But I reply. And I'm trying to get other people to listen to the podcast. So, I don't know. Spread the word, guys. This one's from Seth. I just want to thank you for the podcast. You know what? My brother died when we were kids. He was hit by a car in front of me. No one was watching us. I like to think that's when my life took the course it took. I grew up okay, considering my mother's deeper dive into depression, drugs, and neglect. I was raised by my father. That was a better experience than living with my mother. I grew up feeling very alone and doubtful of myself. I'm just thankful for your podcast. It shows me what makes other people tick, what others went through, what helps others, and how they think. Your name is on a thing that is going to live forever. Your name is on a thing people will talk about forever. Seth. I would just leave it with that. I'll leave it at that. Seth, you know, what I got from this letter is it's, you know, so things happen and, they're out of our control, and it's how you deal with them. And, you know, not to be cliche, but, you know, you can sink. And by the way, no one's going to look at you badly if you do. But you could also swim, and you could also do whatever it takes to be the best you and live for your brother. And, you know, people have bad upbringings and neglect and this and that. And I think that I try to think of it as like, you know, obviously we could sit there and say what we're grateful for. And there's lots of things. And if you do that, it's going to help. and also getting help is important. But I think if you put things into perspective, like, and remember, I'm not Dr. Phil here. I'm just saying what I think. That's all. But we get one life. As far as we know, we get one life. That's what we know. We don't know what else there is out there. So if you think about it like that, no matter how bad things get, this is it. So if it's it, and you're like, I hate this, I just keep thinking it will get better. Hopefully you have a long life, right? A lot of people live to 70, 80, 90, who knows? But you never know what tomorrow brings. You never know what little golden nugget is right around the corner. And I think that's what keeps us all going. You know, we just got to know that tomorrow is better. And we just have to keep looking for that golden nugget. Sometimes we have a golden nugget in front of us. We don't even know it. We don't even realize it. We're not aware of it until it's too late. But I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. But this touched me. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, Seth, is it touched me. And thank you for this. And I hope you're doing well. And I hope you you found that little golden nugget. And I hope you're doing well. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Patrons, we'll be doing a YouTube live with you soon again. And thank you for all the support. Spread the word. If you guys want to join Patreon, if you're not, check it out. You can go to Patreon and go to Inside of You Podcast. A big shout out and thanks to Ryan Taez, my editor and engineer, and my friend, then editor and engineer. I love you, buddy. You're great. I appreciate all your hard work. Hopefully this thing will blow up eventually. Thank you, Bryce, for all your hard work. You just bust your ass and do so much, wear so many hats, and I just don't know what else to say. You're amazing. Jess, I love you. We haven't seen each other a lot because of this whole quarantine. A couple times stopping by and just dropping shit off at the front or whatever, but thank you for all your hard work and helping me pursue my dreams. And thanks, everybody. Make sure you subscribe. Send stuff out. Send a link. Send a link to everybody you know and tell everybody. Online store, Inside of You online store, has merch for Left and Laurel. We got new t-shirts coming out very soon. Inside of You, they might sell out. Who knows? They're pretty dope. I think you're going to love them. And yes, we got black. Everybody's, can you get black t-shirts? Yeah, we got black t-shirts. Ethan. I love you, Ethan. Big shout out to my friend Alex Fadovich, who always listens to the podcast. My friend Troy, all my friends, all my Patreons, all my everybody, even Uncle Dave, who's now listening to the podcast. I love you. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of all of you. And until next week, so long.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll.
Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.